At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Of course, the conspiracy to play out involves now more than 40 people, many different departments of government, and then civilians, housewives, teachers, just every normal human being from white collar to blue collar. It's just a section of society, everyone. And most don't know each other. And they all would have had to conspire at the same time to go against Karen Reed and somehow, I don't know, plant evidence. I mean, because we've now heard about, well, the solo cups, that's a big thing. Like, yeah, what does it even prove? It's John's blood at the end of the day.
Right.
This is Kate McLaughlin. This is a first responder on the scene that they were trying to discredit about her relationship with one of the Elbert's daughters. But this is her testimony, which was pretty solid. It's another recognition of her saying, I hit him.
Once we had come to a stop, I asked if there had been any significant trauma that happened that preceded this. And she answered with a series of statements that she repeated. I hit him. I hit him. There was a woman next to us who told her to calm down. Stop talking, calm down, you're hysterical. So she repeated, I hit him. And a police officer asked her, said, you what? And she repeated it again, I hit him. And the officer then signaled for his sergeant to come down to the scene or down to where he was.
When she first told you that she had hit him, you said there was another woman next to her. Did you know who that woman was?
Not at the time.
Do you now know who that woman was?
I do.
And who was that?
Miss Jen McCabe.
Did you know Miss McCabe at that time?
No.
Do you know her personally now?
No.
Are you friendly or friends with her in any way?
No.
You mentioned that when the defendant said, I hit him. Miss McCabe was trying to intervene?
Yes, it appeared that way.
What did it appear she was trying to do?
Trying to get her to calm down, to stop talking. It appeared that she was
sustained. There was disregard that comment.
Did Ms. McCabe interject verbally?
Yes.
After Ms. McCabe interjected and the defendant made those statements about hitting him, did you persist in getting more information, asking to clarify what she meant by I hit him?
No, I did not.
Why not?
A few reasons. I felt at that point, given the situation and how disturbing, and it was a very emotional situation. The woman was very upset.
Does she seem like someone who's conspiring to cover this up and just make up and pin it on Karen Reed by saying she heard him say, "I hit him," and risk her career, risk her credibility, risk everything?
No, absolutely not. She seems very credible. I would believe her.
Yeah. Here, I found it interesting, and I don't think it's playing well to the jury, Alan Jackson's line of questioning. He seems to be getting them to repeat their original testimony from direct over and over and over. Mm-hmm. And to get the people to keep saying, "I heard her say I hit him." I don't know that you want to keep pounding that into the jury's head if you're the defense of Karen Reed. Here's another clip from the other day.
"I hit him. It's my fault. I did it. That's a confession, correct?"
She said, "I hit him. I hit him. I hit him. I hit him."
And Officer Seraph just stands there and my client walks away, correct?
You'd have to talk to Officer Seraph about that.
Oh, we have.
You should.
Mrs. McLaughlin.
Objection.
Okay, so.
And according to you, you're writing on your glove.
Yes.
What kind of glove?
Just a regular latex glove that we use on the ambulance.
You didn't have a notepad?
I probably did. Sometimes it's easier to just write it down on your glove.
Right. Did you write, "I hit him"? On your
No, I did not.
So he's questioning, well, why didn't the officer intervene? If she's saying, "I hit him, I hit him, I hit him." Keep in mind, they eventually took her to a psych hold.
So, exactly.
So, I mean, would an officer intervene at that moment in time when she's saying, "Did I hit him? I hit him," and every combination of that? I know you're not in law enforcement, but I mean, does it make any sense at that moment in time to intervene? It's not like she's going anywhere.
True.
It's a chaotic, it's a life or death scene at this moment in time.
Yeah. 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 It's hard to say what was in the officer's mind, what the officer heard, but I think that this witness was very credible. And I think you can probably from, you know, Detective Proctor to various things that were done, one can pick apart the way that the investigation went.
Sure.
Why didn't they search the house? You know, those are valid points, but that doesn't negate the I hit him, and the rest of the behavior that we've seen.
Correct. And I agree. There's plenty of pieces of this investigation that could have been done better. But the more I look at it, though, too, the more I'm just, it's a small department.
Yeah.
It's a nor'easter. I thought it was powerful. They had a meteorologist come in and say it was like one of the worst ones on record at that moment in time. And you are having inches of snow come down every single hour onto a crime scene that is based in snow.
Yeah.
And the criticism is you're gathering this in solo cups. That's all they had at the moment. They did.
Exactly.
They eventually did bring evidence bags in, but when snow is coming down that fast, and if you've never been in an environment like this, you just don't know, because it will change like that. Fresh snow, give it 10 minutes. It's going to look like nobody was at this crime scene if everybody walked away at that moment. So I do kind of get where the officers are coming from on, look, if we didn't get this now, we're not going to get it. What's the best thing we can do to get the evidence without actually touching it? I mean, if they were really, really incompetent, they would have just started with their gloves just digging, which wouldn't have been a good idea. But they tried what they could. Was the leaf blower the best idea? I don't know. But it certainly allowed them to find blood. It allowed them to find evidence that was buried under the snow.
Right.
Kind of hard to plant evidence under snow.
Under the snow. Very, very true. Yeah, it does make sense under the conditions.
And the tinier pieces of the taillight are making a lot more sense to me as well. Because, again, tiny, tiny pieces, snow, everyone is walking over this scene. When you walk over a scene like that, and it keeps being cold and it keeps snowing, you know what happens to that bottom layer? It turns to ice.
Ice.
Mm-hmm. And even when you do brush the snow away, then you got that ice layer. You're not mm-hmm. going to get to the grass. Try getting to grass in this sort of a situation where it's been trampled down and more snow came on top of it. You're not
impossible.
Unless you're out there with a flamethrower, you're not going to get to the grass. So why did they find these smaller pieces later? It's not because they were planted. It's because it had to melt.
Yeah, otherwise, 100%.
You weren't going to find it.
100%.
Now, had it not been snowing, had it been a bright, sunny day or just cold and the ground is open, it's a totally different argument. But you have to take the weather into account because that plays such a huge role in this whole thing. Why is it so difficult for people to wrap their minds around just basic facts of this case?
Yeah, I think it's crazy the way that this has gone, the public, sentiment with the again, we can use the word hysteria support of her. There's just not a lot of logic. There's a lot of emotional thinking and the team sport aspect to it. And it's just one of those unfortunate things because we would all like to know what really happened.
Yeah.
And we may never really get that. We can get our best guesses at this point based upon the evidence.
Jackson was also trying to discredit Kate McLaughlin here as being biased or something because she was acquaintances with the Elbert's daughter. Not besties. They're not hanging out together. But I don't know this just seems like a very easy one for most people to understand. If you have a circle of friends, they have friends too. When everybody gets together at a gathering, there's usually a lot of people you don't know, or you kind of know who they are. You've seen them around, but you're not, you're kind, you're friendly. You may end up in a picture next to each other because, okay, everybody get together.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that somehow, because the daughter of the Elberts, which is the house where this happened, and this first responder are in a general circle together, they went to school together, that somehow she's going to, again, put her career, everything on the line for this acquaintance. And Jackson trying to tie the dots or like there's something else.
The reality is
scary.
Ms. McLaughlin, your relationship with Caitlin Albert is far more than simply somebody that you went to high school with. Isn't that true?
I described what it is.
Do you stand by your testimony that Caitlin Albert is, quote, somebody I went to high school, I went to high school with somebody by that name?
I said that, and I described the relationship numerous times throughout that testimony to clarify it.
And you clarified it under questioning by me, correct?
Yes. And Mr. Lally, he asked follow-ups.
And in fact, you were shown some of these photographs last year, too.
Objection.
Sustained.
The reason you clarified it is because you were confronted with photos of yourself last year, correct?
Can you repeat the questions?
Sure. The reason you clarified it, as you just testified, your relationship, is because you were confronted with photographs of you and Caitlin Albert last year, correct?
I just answered the questions that you had.
Right. And you were shown photographs last year.
I was, yes.
There's also another member of the Albert family that you've spoken to about this case, isn't that right?
No.
January 30th, 2022, you were contacted by a member of the Canton Police Department to set up an interview for you.
No, I was not.
You remember being contacted by anybody to set up an interview with Michael Proctor?
The state police called me, and I met with two state troopers.
So she didn't know who they were. I don't know. I'm baffled by this. He's not getting the questions that he wants. And it's just, it's attorney speak. So I'm not really that baffled, but isn't it true? Even if you're completely wrong and you're being shut down every stretch of the way, you're just going to keep saying, isn't this true? How do you think this is playing to a jury? Because it's really feeling badgering to innocent people who were part of a traumatic situation. Even first responders, I mean, yeah, they are human beings too. There is trauma involved, especially when someone like her starts getting harassed by these lunatics out there. And she's just doing her job, showing up to a situation, trying to save someone's life. And somehow now she's part of this grand conspiracy.
Yeah. Yeah. His approach, I know I've heard some attorneys that think he's doing a great job and they like his approach. I find it too aggressive bullying. Mm-hmm. And when you combine that with what the community, the Karen supporters, have done to these people, it pushes me in the other direction. I don't care for it. I would have a very negative emotional response to his behavior if I were in the jury.
How does an otherwise, I don't know, I don't want to say rational, but I don't think you are rational if you're going to think that this is, that she is someone who is conspiring on this. But how do people, and I'm not talking about the cult leader of all this, I'm talking about just the average people who find themselves being cult members, somehow twist that into this grand conspiracy and somehow it registers in their mind that, yes, this person is conspiring and they're lying and they're making all this up, despite just reality on reality's terms proving everything the exact opposite way. How, what are the mental gymnastics going on here in these people's minds?
The human capacity for team sports and for the us versus them mentality, why people in groups can do horrible things that if they weren't in a group, they would never have acted that way. Mm-hmm. But you put all of them together, you put them in the same place online where this emotional reasoning just builds up and they lose all ability to think rationally. And some people are very prone to that kind of emotional reasoning. Unfortunately, it's not the best of our human traits, but people do bad things that way.
The icing on the cake to all of this is the reality that Karen was very drunk through all of this, and that was confirmed through Hannah Knowles' testimony.
And based on your calculations, as far as the 93 milligrams per deciliter, what does that convert to as far as the blood alcohol concentration for the defendant at 9:08 a.m. on January 29th?
93 milligrams per deciliter in serum alcohol concentration would convert to between 0.078 and 0.082 grams per cent.
And from your calculations and your retrograde analysis, what was the range that you were able to calculate for the defendant's blood alcohol concentration at 12:45 a.m. on January 29th?
Between 0.14 and 0.28 grams per cent.
Almost to a 3.0.
Incredible.
Just
absolutely
almost
incredible.
Now, tell me, what's going on with the human brain at that level?
Complete loss of the prefrontal cortex, which is the logical thinking part of the brain, controlled by the amygdala, which is the emotional part of the brain. It speaks about her, I will say, alcohol dependence, because she was still driving a car. Mm-hmm. She could still make phone calls. And I think if I were that intoxicated, not only would I have been puking for hours, but I would certainly not be able to drive a car and make phone calls. I mean, a lot of people would be passed out at that point. So when I talk about this is somebody that I think really has a drinking problem, people who are alcoholic, they have the ability to appear fairly normal. They may not even be slurring. They may be doing functional things, but their thinking brain is not present. It is not plugged in. And so you get this much more primitive, emotional, almost animalistic behavior coming out where they will do things that if they were sober, they wouldn't do. And so I think that's a huge factor in this.
When we're talking about that, because everybody goes, well, she has a high tolerance. Okay, I certainly buy that, the fact that she's able to do that. But high tolerance, that doesn't mean that your body isn't and your brain isn't reacting 100%, the same ways that 100%. Everybody else is.
Yeah, the hippocampus, the memory part of the brain that controls memory, is not functioning normally at all.
Yeah.
And that's where most people would be in a complete blackout, where they're, and that doesn't mean passed out. It simply means they're going around appearing functional, often not even appearing intoxicated if you don't look too closely, but their brain is not functioning properly at all.
How do people get to that state where, like, others, you know, and early on, if you're drinking, you'd be able to, you just pass out, you'd be done.
You pass out, you throw up, and you pass out.
How is it that the brain somehow learns to function at that level of intoxication, where otherwise it would have taken you out, but somehow you can somehow appear relatively with it, relatively sober to a certain extent, and still keep moving around. I mean, that nothing to do with the case, but just like, what the hell? How does the brain do that?
Yeah, it is really, really interesting, the impact of alcohol on the brain. And for somebody that drinks a lot over a long period of time, this is something that just adapts, that certain parts of the body can tolerate it, but certainly the prefrontal cortex doesn't tolerate it. And so it's just one of those weird things about alcoholism. And I think a lot of people think, well, if she wasn't slurring, she wasn't, you know, stumbling, that means she was okay. And that's not true. It doesn't work that way.
No. And that's quite a high level. I mean, possibly near a 0.3.
Unbelievable.
That's like it's pumping. And like, she kept going. Yeah. She could have died of alcohol poisoning herself. I mean, even if she thinks she's good, your organs and your brain don't.
Exactly. And that's one of the concerns. When in one of the interviews I heard with her, the TV interview, she was saying, oh, well, I had a little bit of a buzz, but I, you know, didn't really feel it. I wasn't impaired. Okay, that's nonsense. That's nonsense. And if she's still talking nonsense about that, what else is nonsense?
That's the biggest question here. I think we are all asking. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, thank you for joining us. You have that memoir coming out too. When does it come out and where can people get it?
It is out.
And it's
it
out,
can be ordered. It is out. It can be ordered from any bookseller. Amazon's got it. It's Nightbird, one word, by Siobhan Scott, Nightbird. And any bookstore can get it if you don't want to use Amazon. And yeah, it's done really well. And I'm thrilled at the reviews. I'm honored.
I need a copy.
Okay. Well, make sure you get one.
I need one.
And it's also on Audible with read by the author. It just came out on Audible. So
I'm doing that. I mean, because I do Audible all the time. So
okay.
I'm gonna be doing Audible. I'm gonna go buy it today on Audible. So yeah. All right. Thank you so much. Always a pleasure and always extremely interesting as we break this thing down.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.